100.3 WRNB Media Philadelphia. It's old school 100.3. Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-263-1003. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now, here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman, and this is your hour to ask your legal questions one at a time and get the answer you've been looking for. I'm joined in the studio with my buddy and co-host, David M. Rappaport.
Good morning. Hello. Beautiful day in the neighborhood, as always.
Yes, it is. Folks, if you want to give David and I a call, all you got to do is grab your cell phone, pick up your finger, and punch up 215-263-1003. That brings you into the studio where you'll talk to our screener, Larry. Larry the screener. 215-263-1003 gets you in here. And once you pass through Larry, David and I will give you our best shot at whatever question you may have. 215-263-1003. I don't know, David, we've been doing this now for a few years.
Yes, we have. Seems like yesterday.
Yeah, it's like antiquity. it just goes on and on and on. You know, I watch Kyle's little goatee grow. I mean, it's taken 3 years and it's now about an inch. There you go.
From a young man to a young lad. Or a young lad to a young man, whatever it is, I don't know.
Yeah. All right, David,
we have a caller already.
Folks, if you're listening, you can reach us at 215-263-1003. All right, let's talk to Andrew from Mount Airy, who has a question about a judgment. Good morning, Andrew. Welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
What's your question, Andrew?
Basically, I had a judgment. I had to go to court, and I never went to court. And now I'm wondering, how can I get this cleared off my record?
Well, yeah,
by
paying the judgment would be one way.
That'd be one way, yeah.
Negotiating a payment plan or some small payment. How old is the judgment?
About a year.
Okay, and how much is it for?
$5,000.
Okay. So the judgment is going to remain on your record, you know, for unless the judgment holder has to renew the judgment every 5 years. So for the next 4 years, they don't have to do anything. It's there. It can, you know, obviously it's going to affect your credit rating, your ability to get a mortgage and all that, buy a car. And so if you really want to deal with it, you probably should call the judgment holder and negotiate some sort of payment on that judgment. At which point the judgment can be marked satisfied, or it can be marked in some fashion like you are in the midst of paying it.
Yeah, nobody wants, the judgment holder, the piece of paper that they have isn't doing them any good. So, and they're looking at holding a piece of paper for God knows how long. So they would probably welcome a call from you, even if it's not all of the judgment, some payment might be enough to satisfy them.
Unfortunately, even if the judgment were invalid, if you said to me, hey, but Dean, they shouldn't have gotten a judgment.
Right,
I had shown up, they wouldn't. Unfortunately, after a year, those arguments are not really going to get you very far. And
okay.
So you're going to have to assume the judgment's legit and deal with it at this point. And that's our best advice for you this morning. And good luck with that. And you can always give us a call back and let us know how things worked out, okay?
Okay.
All right. Be well. Let's talk to Andrew from West Oak Lane. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, guys. Good morning. First time listening. I'm enjoying the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You've got a very interesting question. What's going on in Andrew's world?
All right. So last summer, a young guy, a teenager, stole a car and crashed into the side of my car while I was parked and then lost control of the car and then went into my across-the-street neighbor's fence and destroying their fence. The guy ran from the scene. I filed a police report, got in contact with my insurance company to see if they can locate the person that owned the car, gave them the right license plate number. A few weeks passed by, about 6 weeks, and they weren't able to give me any information on the owner of the car. So I've been stuck with a bum fender, and my across the street's neighbor's been stuck with a broken fence, and we don't know like where to turn in terms of getting justice done.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you the quick answers here on Court Radio. Number one, if you take that tag and you write to the Pennsylvania DMV and ask for the registration information for that vehicle, they'll send you back a copy of the registration, which is, should contain the insurance company.
Okay.
However, there's always a however in the law. However, that probably won't do you a heck of a lot of good. And here's why. When a car is stolen, an insurance company has a legal out. In other words, they don't pay liability claims on stolen cars. They protect the interests of the owner of the car, but the owner has no liability to you unless you could show that the owner knew the person who took the car and allowed them to have access to the keys. They had to participate somehow. But if it truly is a stolen car, Joe Schmo breaks into your neighbor's car, jumps in, hotwires it, and takes off on a joyride, crashing into your car, then that person's insurance company doubtful that they'll ever have to legally pay you or anybody else.
Mm.
Yeah.
I assume you don't have your own insurance for collision.
Well, yeah, I just completed paramedic school, so I had to cut back on some things. So, yeah, I had to drop my collision coverage, which I did 2 weeks before.
Yep. It's all
therein lies the issue,
Andrew. It's always 2 weeks before the accident when we
Murphy's Law.
Yeah. All right. Well, we thank you for calling Court Radio. I hope we gave you some good information.
Definitely, I appreciate it. And you guys come on every Sunday. Hopefully, I can listen to you guys more often.
Absolutely, good. Every Sunday, 7 a.m. right here, 100.3. Let's talk to Mike from North Philly. Good morning, Mike, and welcome to Court Radio.
Morning. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, thanks. What's your question?
Okay, my question is, like, a little over a year ago, my father made an agreement to sell his house to this guy on time. And the guy said his money was held up for about 6 months, so he agreed to pay, like, $2,000 a month for 6 months. And if it, at the end of that 6 months, He didn't pay the whole, you know, come up with the rest of it. He would forfeit what, you know, what the original price is. But meanwhile, he done cut the place into apartments and rented it out and everything, you know. And I'm trying to see, I'm trying to see that by my father giving him a little more time, did he break the agreement or do we have a case to get his house back?
Okay, good question. Well,
was it in writing?
Yeah, the original agreement was in writing, I assume.
Yes.
Okay, and the modification that your dad made, the generous modification, was that in writing?
What you mean, the modification?
Well, when your father extended it, gave him some more time, as you put it.
No, he didn't get it.
Okay. Well, here's the answer. The answer is that, yes, it might be deemed a new modification of the agreement. It may be that it gave the owner or the prospective owner some additional rights, but it probably doesn't throw the entire baby out with the bathwater. So the agreement's still good, and if, in fact, the guy never pays the money, I think there's an argument, a strong argument, that he's in violation of the agreement and he loses.
Stop paying.
Just stop paying. Well,
he's
then
got people in there written it.
Yeah. Well, then it's time for Dad to hire a lawyer and take some action to get the guy off of the property and out of getting the rents from the tenants. Your dad has rights under the agreement. I don't think those rights were dismissed by his extension. But I don't think it's something he should be doing on his own. I think it's time to retain the services of an attorney.
Yeah, I think so, too.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks for calling Court Radio. You can always reach us all week long at 215-227-2727.
227-2727. Thank you very much.
Angela from Lindenwald, New Jersey. Good morning, Angela, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
Hello there.
I just wanted to know, if a police officer came to your door with a warrant and you asked to see it, is he supposed to let you see it or is he supposed to tell you no?
Well, usually when I watch those crime TV shows, I see them show the warrant. I would say, Angela, that you do have to see the warrant. But more importantly, there has to be a warrant, or otherwise the search will be deemed unconstitutional and illegal. And that is my answer to your question. You should see the warrant. And but absolutely, he has to he or she has to have a warrant. Now, what happens if the police officers have a valid warrant executed in a valid fashion, but they neglected to show it to you? Will that throw the search out? The question, that's a good question, but it's one that I don't have an immediate answer for. And I'd ask you to give us a call tomorrow during the week, because we have a team. There's many teams of attorneys at My Philly Lawyer. One group of attorneys does only the criminal representation, and I'd want you to talk to them for an answer to that question, whether a valid search or an otherwise valid search has a warrant, warrant's legal, searches within the parameters of the warrant, would be deemed illegal because they didn't show it to you. Okay. You can reach us during the week at 215-227-2727. You know where to call for all of your legal issues. 215-227-2727. Thanks, Angela, and have a great Sunday. Let's go to Dornicia in line 3. Hello, Dornicia.
Yes, hey, how you doing?
All right. Hey, did you think we'd finally get to you, Dornicia?
I was waiting very patiently.
All right, dear. What's your question?
Yes, I'm calling because my father been paying life insurance for me and my sister since the late 80s, early 90s, and Colonial is trying to drop us from 3 months and say, because we're smokers now, so they could no longer cover us with no kind of retribution.
Okay. What neighborhood are you from, Dornicia?
I'm from New Orleans, but I'm in Philadelphia.
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Got
wow.
New Orleans accent going.
Oh,
New Orleans.
New Orleans.
New Orleans. Wow. Did you come here after the flood?
Yes. Actually, that's where I had to be here from there. They put us on an airplane, and it's where we landed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So your area was affected to the point that you had to leave?
Yes.
Wow,
yes.
That's a shame.
What parish were you in?
I was in a second ward.
Second ward. Okay. Well, listen, we're happy you've relocated because you bring a little Cajun to our our area. And that's always a good thing.
Right.
David's a big fan of Cajun.
I like Cajun.
All right. So Dornicia has a life insurance policy that she's been paying on, David. And
well, that's what we need to find out. Have the payments been made and they're just saying we're cutting you off? I don't get the
whole. Well, she became a smoker.
They cut us off because they say we're smokers now. When he had to renew the policy.
I got you. You renewed the policy. They had you fill out a medical thing and they asked you if you smoked. You said yes. And they said, oh, we're not renewing the policy.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that go ahead, Dean.
Well, it's going to depend on the policy
it is,
language.
Exactly.
That's a contract, and whether they can cut you off because you have subsequently become a smoker is really dependent upon the actual language and whether you're entitled to anything. See, term life insurance is not something that grows equity. It doesn't have any value. You have it as long as you pay. When you stop paying, you stop having it, and it doesn't have any cash value. So I don't know if you have a term policy or a whole life policy that may have cash value, but everything is determined by the contract. And so if you want to come and you really want to get an answer to this question, you need to A, get your contract, and B, come down and see us at My Philly Lawyer. So give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727. Tell him Dean said, give us a call. And he said he'll take a look at our contract. And I will. All right. You bring the contract down. You bring your Cajun self down to my office, and we'll take a look at that contract for you. And we'll let you know if what they did was legal. Okay.
Thank you.
215-263-1003. I'm getting the nod from Kyle. I'm doing a good job. He's attaboying me. He's giving me this Tony Soprano.
You like that answer?
Yeah. No, he just likes the we're moving people.
We're
like,
moving.
We're like selling burgers, you know, in and out, in and out.
Moving along.
You know, in they come with Larry, out they go with us, David. And in between is Kyle. It's like a big burger factory. 215-263-1003. This is Court Radio, and we talk about legal things and things in Philly generally. Okay. All right, David. Let's talk to Mike from Lansdale, PA.
Ah, Lansdale.
The old Lansdale.
Coast.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
Morning.
We're doing well, Mike. What's your issue?
My issue is, excuse me, back in 2009, I was arrested for driving under the influence. And I will take my full responsibility and part. It was a stupid mistake that I made. It never should have happened. I should have been smarter and took a cab, but I didn't. I got caught. I was more than willing to go through the system, pay my fines, pay my penalties, jump through the hoops, which I did.
Okay.
I hold a CDL license.
Uh-huh.
And I came to find out that the CDL portion of my license was going to be suspended for a year. In that time, I had lost my job, my car, my apartment, a brand-new Harley-Davidson motorcycle. I lost everything. A year later, I got my CDL back, and I started putting in applications to start driving again, and came to find that I was unemployable because of the DUI, which was on my motor vehicle record and still is. I called PennDOT to find out if I could have this expunged, and they said, no, it's on your record forever. You know, sorry, but that's just the way it is. But in a sense, what PennDOT's doing is by keeping it on the record. Like I said, mine was a first offense.
Did you get an ARD?
Did you get an ARD?
Did you go into
an ARD program for your DUI?
Yes, I was. I was on ARD.
Then okay. It should be expunged for everything but law enforcement purposes. Although, maybe CDL licensing is allowed to see those records.
I don't know. Here's what I'm going to tell you to do.
Yeah.
Okay, you ready?
Uh-huh.
Give us a call, Mike, during the week. I have an attorney at my office that does exactly this type of administrative procedure where he has brought clients to hearings at the PennDOT offices. And even on appeal, there are opportunities to have a hearing where this very issue can be litigated. His name's Bill Hobson, and Bill's in the office and has successfully represented commercial operators, license holders in these kinds of hearings.
Okay, because the thing I was thinking is, I mean, isn't PennDOT legally blackballing drivers? Because the minute you apply for an job, they check the insurance. You know, they check your motor vehicle record. The company's insurance company says no, we're not touching.
The answer to that is no. Because they have a duty. We talk about duties. They're the governing body for the Commonwealth for driving.
Well,
and they need to keep records on people who might be considered to be a danger, or need to look at, you know, their history to be able to tell.
And the answer is yes, you're blackballed.
Well, yeah, right.
but that's not the real issue. The real issue is can they keep that on your record?
Right.
The effect of that being kept on your record is you're going to have it impossible. You're going to have to find a new profession is what it means.
Right.
And you're not going to be able to do what you did before because you're not going to have that license if they're permitted to keep it on your record. There are times when drivers are permitted to get a clean slate and begin anew. The question is whether you can now, after a period of time has passed, whether it's still possible for you to have this expunged. And we'll be happy to investigate that for you during the week. Just give us a call at 215-227-2727. 215-263-1003. Guess what, David?
What?
An all-female jury is trying George Zimmerman.
That's right.
Isn't that a little strange?
That is very strange. How did that happen, huh?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
We know how it happened. We don't know why, but the attorneys, you know, got rid of people. They only get a set number of people they can get rid of, but they got rid of enough people that it just turned out that it's an all-female jury. And I wonder, what do you think the implication is of that, though? I really don't know if that's going to matter at all in anything. I mean,
right?
Is well, it? I mean,
no, I don't know. I mean, no, I'm not a jury consultant, and I really haven't given that much thought. But their moms, you know,
yeah.
Trayvon was a young man, you know,
a son. Yeah,
yeah still.
But so is Zimmerman, you know.
Yeah, he is, but he's a gun-toting man, you know, with a kind of a angry racist bent to him.
Couldn't one of the mothers, let's say,
have given birth to an angry,
gun-toting
racist?
He's keeping the community
kid?
Safe. This like my want my son to do that too, you know, that kind of thing.
I
can't expect everybody to be
right,
you know, thinking he's a gun-toting racist.
No, but they're all going to have sympathy for Trayvon.
Yeah, well, sure.
And I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. I don't know that it has an effect, like you said. There's probably a mixture of people on the jury, but it is all female.
Yeah, right. And I guess we can segue. Speaking of quote-unquote racists,
yes.
You don't know anything about the story, which I find unbelievable. You must live in a hole. But Paula Deen, who is a very popular food, southern cooking diva.
Is she a racist?
Well, look, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I don't understand this. This is another, in my opinion, product of our media culture and the media blowing something into proportions that affect someone negatively. She's being sued. Her company is being sued by somebody who's alleging racist environment, you know, there were some racial things said to her and so on and so forth. So she was deposed. And in the deposition, the attorney asked her, have you ever used the N-word? Ever? Her answer now, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but I'm going to give you the accurate answer, was, well, in the past, you know, many, 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 many moons ago, I probably did use it. You know, I don't use it now. But it probably came out of my mouth, and you know, I'm a Southern woman. I lived in the South, and back, you know, during the time, a lot of people used it. But I'm not condoning it too. But well, just the fact that she said she used it, boom, the gauntlet came down. I mean, you have no idea. The media jumped on it. She's a racist. She said the N-word, and they fired her from the Food Network. They're not renewing her network. They're not renewing her contract. She's done. That's it. Bing, bam, boom. You're gone.
Again, not knowing Paula Deen, not knowing any of. This is what I know about.
She said
Paula
one more
Deen.
Thing that
she's a heavyset Southern woman.
Well, that was the controversy.
Likes to cook with butter.
That was the that was her first controversy.
She was almost fired.
She got
over
diabetes.
That.
Well, because
right.
she had diabetes, and she said one other thing that I think. Got her fired. Here's what she said, and you'll appreciate this one. And this, I just said, she's dumb. She said, in furtherance of that answer in the deposition, she said, my husband and I would frequent a restaurant. She goes, I'll give you an example. She goes, my husband and I frequent a restaurant now in the South, and it has only elderly black gentlemen as the servers. And they're in bow ties. And she goes, and that's the traditional Southern feel that we like. And really, you know, she's saying like they're slaves. Like, you know, this is the slaves is what she's talking about.
Plantation owner.
Exactly.
Paula Deen, the plantation
well,
owner.
Well, that's kind of what she was alluding to. And people took that
she
to mean this is
to
what
be
she wants.
Fired.
This is what she wants is what they're saying.
But I think she just likes her and her whole family. I think that and all of these freaks on reality TV and food is really
right.
just an adjunct of reality TV.
Sure.
All of these freaks, I'll call them freaks,
yeah.
want the attention because that puts them back in front of a camera. I mean, her kids now have food shows, I think. You know, they're like, we're not as fat as mama, so we're going to have the healthy Southern cooking food.
Right, right,
and so,
exactly.
You know, they're all beating each other down just so that they can take their freak show into TV
But here's
land.
The legal aspect that I find interesting is you and I both well know, Deen. She's been on TV a long time, and she's been doing a lot of cooking things. This kind of thing never came out. The diabetes thing came out, of course, but where does it come out? In a deposition. Why? Because as savvy as she may be as a business person, You know as well as I do, we've deposed a lot of people. When you're in that room and you swear to tell the truth and the lawyers are around and the videotape and whatever, things kind of go awry. You know, you're the true self comes out. The answers, you know, come out.
Absolutely.
And she answered truthfully and, you know, unfortunately
well,
for
no.
her.
I mean, look, the full story will come out eventually, but she's had her time in the show, in the spotlight. She's made enough money. Take her, you know, take her fat butt.
I think they may have jumped the gun a tiny bit by just throwing her out there. But
probably not.
She made a lot of money for them.
She's made a lot of money. She's from the South. It's enough. 215-263-1003. We're going to come right back, David.
Okay.
Where we're going to hit our topic for today, which we've been avoiding like the plague.
Yes, we will mention it.
We will hit our topic for today in 2 minutes, folks. Come on back with us. We'll be here for you.
2 and 2.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman, on Old School 100.3.
I want that voice. Old school. I mean, I can't even do that voice.
Old school.
I mean, that guy's got a good voice.
Okay. Explosions. Bada boom. Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada bing, bada... Remember that episode where they're in, where Paulie and the other guy,
Paulie Walnuts,
and the Michael, I think his name or whatever his name was, they were in the Russian. They were going after the two Russian gentlemen in the winter in the snow. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, the funniest.
No. You know what? I think I'm going to do a start from the beginning of The Sopranos and work my way through all 105 episodes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was brilliant.
It was. All right. Well, listen, we got callers. We're going to get to them. Folks,
yes.
Just stay on the line. We're going to jump in a second. But I want to talk about what I want to talk about.
And we got to talk about it. We can't talk about it enough, obviously, as you'll see why.
I've had 3 new cases this week, David.
Okay.
My clients were catastrophically injured. In fact, one I visited at Hospital University of Pennsylvania. And
okay.
She was medevaced from the scene of the accident. She was a pedestrian struck by a car on the boulevard. You know, they put these new traffic, these pedestrian walkways and traffic lights in between like Tyson and Cottman on the boulevard at Friendship Street.
All 6 lanes, right?
Like- right. And so pedestrians get to walk across,
right.
And they have their own traffic light. So traffic stops in an area where they're not used to stopping.
Right.
And, in a high speed area. And this woman got nailed by a car.
Oof.
She was medevaced by helicopter from the scene of the accident to the hospital, University of Pennsylvania. You know she's bad.
Yeah.
The medevac trip, the helicopter trip,
yeah.
was $18,000.
I believe it.
$18,000 from...
It's crazy, but I believe it.
From Northeast Philly to West Philly. Okay, and of course she's in the hospital. She's got 2 fractured legs, a fractured pelvis. The list goes on and on. She's very, and she's out of work. Obviously,
yeah.
She really depends upon her salary. You just couldn't imagine a worse scenario, either medically or financially. And the question is that I had for her was, do you have insurance at home? Now, folks, you're listening right now and you're saying, well, Dean, why? Why does this woman need insurance at home? Well, because she has...
You mean car insurance.
Car insurance.
Yeah.
She owns, or her husband, her family, her children, her husband owns 2 vehicles in her household.
Okay.
So I said, do you have insurance on them? Yes. We have good coverage, was the answer.
Full coverage, I usually say, right?
So I checked the policies out, and they do have good coverage on liability. If they hurt somebody, their policy will pay up to $100,000 to the injured party that they've hurt. But the insurance that she needs, what's it called, David?
Underinsured motorist.
Car. Right. Uninsured?
0.
Exactly.
She didn't have it.
you're learning.
Yes.
It is not a mandatory coverage. You must demand it from your agent. Uninsured and underinsured motorist, and get as much as you can afford.
Yeah.
Because God forbid, if you're injured in an accident like my new client, then if you have uninsured and underinsured, you don't care to a certain extent what the tortfeasor or the negligent party has.
Chances are the bumblehead, I'm going to go further in your scenario, I don't know anything about it, but chances are the bumblehead who hit her had either no insurance or the minimal amount in Pennsylvania, which is $15,000. And $15,000 doesn't even cover her helicopter trip, let alone all of her injuries, her lost wages, and everything else she's going to go through.
Exactly.
And that's all she can get, right?
That's it.
$15,000.
If he has insurance.
Right.
And we don't know that yet because we're waiting on the police report. It's taking longer than normal because there's a lot, you know, involved in a catastrophic loss. And so when we get the police report, it will contain his or her insurance information, and we'll see. We'll keep our fingers crossed for our client. But the point is, you don't need to depend upon some stranger having insurance, enough insurance.
And by the way, getting uninsured and underinsured coverage does not prohibitively raise your rate. It's really not that much money. Over the course of a year, it might be $300, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which isn't that much when you think of the cost of not having it. I mean, really.
Right.
It's unbelievable. And look, we live in a city where a lot of people are going to have the minimal coverage or nothing. So you need this coverage.
And people all the time take that chance. And I guess they go, listen, I have had insurance for 7 years and I've never had an accident. Right. So I've saved that $300 times 7 years, David. I saved $2,000. Mm-hmm. I'm smart. Mm-hmm. Smart, smart, smart. Smart until you walk outside and you get run over by a car and it happens and you can't plan for it. That's why it's insurance.
Right. Right.
So,
that's why you need it.
You know,
when you don't think you need it.
Folks, pull out your policies today. Do yourself a favor and do your family a favor. Pull your policies out and make sure you have uninsured and underinsured motorist bodily injury protection. And get as much as, imagine yourself in a catastrophic accident tomorrow and say, is that enough coverage? Am I gonna have enough to replace my salary, to pay the medical expenses, to pay for my pain and suffering? Am I going to have enough to get compensated? And if you're not, then tomorrow morning, call your insurance agent and get more.
Yeah, everyone thinks that just because they would be, quote unquote, the victim, they didn't have anything to do with it, that they're going to be able to recover everything from the person who caused the injury to them. And that is so untrue, in particular with car accidents, because we have laws that prohibit or put, you know, limits on what you can get, and people don't buy the insurance and so on and so forth. And you can only get what's there.
And as my mother would say, you can't get blood from a stone.
Well, you can get, like the other caller you mentioned, you'll get a judgment against the driver for $1.5 million.
And you can put that judgment up on the wall in a frame.
And stare at it.
And look at it. Let's talk to Brian from East Falls, who's got some comments. Brian, good morning and welcome to Court Radio. Oh, Brian.
Hello.
Hi, hello. Brian. Welcome to Court Radio.
Hi. Thank you for all the attorneys that fight for the rights of people.
It's our pleasure, Brian.
I hope the young lady makes out well.
You have a comment or question today for Court Radio?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
My comment is concerning unemployment compensation and disability.
Yep.
Is if you started collecting unemployment, then your disability came through. Is that a conflict of interest?
Well, they're usually mutually exclusive in the fact that when you collect unemployment, you're essentially telling the Commonwealth that you're capable and able to work, and that if a suitable job comes along, you can take it. If you're disabled and collecting disability, that sort of flies in the face of that basic tenet of unemployment, that you're not working because you don't have a job available to you, but you're capable of working should one become available. So, yeah, I would say that they are mutually exclusive, generally speaking. Yep.
But you can, with disability, you can work part-time.
Well, it really depends on the disability. If you have a private disability policy, some of them dictate that if you can't do the particular job you were doing, you'll get that disability. But if you can do something else, you can still do that. It depends. So that there is a situation where you could feasibly get both. But I don't think that's your situation. I didn't get the idea that that's your situation.
Well, and again, it would take a careful reading of the disability contract, and exactly knowing what your disability is, to what extent you were disabled, and what you could still do. So the answer is, as often the case, it's a maybe. If you have a question about your specific situation you'd like further answered, please give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727, where we'll be happy to sit down and meet with you and discuss your issues.
Thanks, guys.
Let's talk to Janelle from Newcastle, Delaware, who's got a comment or question about automobile accidents. Janelle, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. Good morning. I wanted to ask a question about an automobile accident, and I wanted to find out if I intended to pursue a product defect liability case against my car manufacturer. Does that prevent me from pursuing, which I'm assuming the initial would probably go on for years, but does that prevent me from pursuing a claim against my auto insurance policy?
It doesn't, but big caveat, you got to worry about releasing or finalizing anything, because you could very well release your ability to go after other defendants, other culpable parties. In other words, they're all linked together, so it all has to be brought simultaneously or together so that you can sort of massage all of the issues with every entity.
Okay.
Because settling with one, even though the other is not a party, if you sign a general release with one party and the issues emanate from the same common facts, the same accident, the same incident, then you release people who aren't even on the release.
Uh-huh.
You know, so if you have an automobile accident and part of the injuries were caused by a defect to the automobile, part of the injuries were caused by the negligence of a third-party driver, and they all culminate to cause those injuries, and you enter into a settlement with a third-party driver and release them in exchange for some amount of money, you, in essence, have released the manufacturer of the automobile for the defect that may have played a part in that injury, even though they weren't a part of the lawsuit or on the release itself.
Okay.
Got to be very, very careful when you're releasing parties that you have given full thought to all of the issues and how that all plays together to create the injury. Thanks for giving us a call, Janelle, and have a great Sunday.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you know, we had a caller. She, I don't know what happened. We got disconnected, but she was really, really angry.
Oh, she did. Oh, darn.
Don't
say we.
That I took a shot at Paula Deen's
weight.
Well,
you mentioned fat and the butter and all that, but I would just say to Donna, you not been listening to Chris Christie remarks that Dean's been making? Because he started on that fat thing a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, because I think overweightness is the next smoking. It is a disease, okay, caller. I don't know the caller's name.
Donna, I think.
Donna. It is a disease. I think it's a form of addiction. And I think that, when we go through life, and I struggle with my weight as well, when we go through life overweight, we have health problems that healthy people don't have, and we create a draw on our medical, society, the medical whatever. But
are some people, though.
I was just angry at Paula Deen, and I took a shot, and I apologize, Donna. And you're right. I shouldn't have taken that shot. But, people like her, people who I think are ignorant and who are, like, I kind of think that Paula Deen is a racist. People like that really kind of make me angry, and I took a shot at her. So there you go. That's as good as apology you're going to get on a Sunday morning,
but
from Dean Weitzman.
There are people, and I agree with you about the obesity problem, and a lot of it is caused by, quote-unquote, you can call it addiction, you can call it whatever you want, just people not going out of their way to be healthy. But there are, a segment of society where it is genetic. I mean, there is, it's known scientifically that there is a genetic aspect.
Oh,
not
no.
with everyone.
Listen,
not
my, with everyone. My little friend.
Yes.
Addiction is genetic. It's, you know, it isn't all will. It isn't all, oh, I just want to go have a donut. It's, you know, you're filling up that void inside of yourself with the donut. Well, not everybody has the void. Like, look at our healthy specimen of Kyle here.
But
there's no void in this man. He knows he's good.
Are you saying that some people
need a donut to feel good?
Are you saying that and I'm not the majority. Some, a little segment,
yes,
are just born with the physically. There's no way they are going to be, you know, 100 if they're 5 foot. 165 pound, the optimal weight.
Right.
It's just they're born, you know.
I'm sure there are. I'm not.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm a doctor, but I mean, yeah. That makes sense.
But it's not. I agree with you. Not the majority.
Thank you. Thank you. If I get any agreement from you on Sunday morning, I feel like it's been a success.
I can't believe you apologized, Donna. You should feel vindicated a little bit because
right.
he did apologize.
Right. And Donna, if you call back and give us your name and address, we'll send you a My Philly Lawyer gift pack.
Now he's bribing you. Now he goes, he resorted to bribes. Okay. That's right.
You can walk around and say, listen, Dean Weitzman apologized to me. I'm wearing his hat. 215-263-1003 gets you into the studio. 215, he's shaking his head, folks. 263-1003. Let's talk to Daryl from Folsom, Delaware. Good morning, Daryl, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great, thanks. Even better now that you're on the line.
Good. It was I guess fate that I was listening to you guys this morning. I go to jury trial next Monday for a case against Delaware County Memorial Hospital in the loss of my wife. She went in for regular knee surgery, was overdosed on pain medications, which I'm understanding is becoming something quite common. You know, we feel we have a strong case, but my problem is we went to a mediation and basically the hospital's lawyers, the doctor's lawyers, would rather go to trial in Delaware County because what they're saying is that in Delaware County, the payouts or the damages for wrongful deaths by hospital are so minimal that it's safer for them, even though they know they're wrong, to go to trial. And it's just disheartening that the system has gotten this way. And I'm just like, you know, I don't know what to do.
There's nothing, Daryl, there's nothing, unfortunately, you can do in your instance at this point. I mean, what you have to do is talk about it. And that's what you're doing because, you know, folks, we've got folks listening from everywhere, including Delaware County. And those folks are going to sit on juries. And you're going to sit on a jury. And then the question is, you know, it's always mind-boggling to me. You have a jury that gives such a benefit of the doubt to a doctor and medical facility that they ignore competent, strong evidence and find against a plaintiff or, as you said, find in favor of a plaintiff, but just award such a such a modicum amount of damages that it almost pays for the defendants in those cases to have tried the case.
Yeah, and you identified a problem that we have every day that we do this kind of work. I get that argument all the time from defense counsel and insurance companies when the case is not in a venue they think, like Philadelphia, they're afraid of.
Right.
If it's in Delaware County, the juries are bad there for plaintiffs. So, and I agree with you 100%. Not only is that ridiculous, but more importantly, what Dean said, to do what can be done. One thing is obviously talking about it. The second thing is has to do with voting and legislative things because tort reform and the insurance companies are very good at telling people that lawsuits are fake and this is nonsense and your rates are going to go up if you give money to someone and you're just looking to win the lottery even though your wife passed away, all these kinds of things. And you need to combat that because it's not true. And the only way you find out it's not true is, unfortunately, when you become a victim like yourself. And then you realize how bad it really is out there.
Yeah. it really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we went to a mediation hearing and we weren't looking for no, you know, outlandish amount of settlement or anything
right.
like that. But what they came back with was just totally ridiculous. And then their other premise is, well, we're going to use doctors that say that she wouldn't have lived that much longer anyway because she was obese. And so, therefore, you don't deserve any type of settlement. And I'm like, right. well, wait a minute. You were wrong, you know?
That doesn't matter.
No it's no longer a case of whether you were right or wrong.
No.
Just how little you have to pay out.
That's right. And well, that's an insurance company for you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, those things that you mentioned do mm-hmm. get to come out at the time of trial. For
okay.
instance, if you have two victims of medical malpractice,
mm-hmm.
and let's assume the malpractice is clear for both.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not even an issue. The
right.
jury has to assess damages.
Right.
And if one of the victims of the malpractice is a 35-year-old income-earning father who has two minor children at home, and he's making $100,000 a year working as the vice president of a bank,
mm-hmm.
And then the other victim of the malpractice is an 83-year-old grandpa, great-grandfather,
mm-hmm.
Patriarch of his family, but
mm-hmm.
long since retired.
Right.
You will get a substantially higher verdict
mm-hmm.
for the income-earning dad versus...
Right.
Will their families experience the loss the same? Of course.
Yes.
Will the pain be the same for the survivors? Absolutely. But
right.
the jury gets to look at things that go into how much the economic damages are. And,
yeah.
and that, unfortunately, is a fact of life. So
okay.
if somebody has many other what they call comorbidity issues, things
mm-hmm.
that will eventually take their life, their life expectancy, becomes an issue in the trial.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they use that. They use whatever
yeah.
they have to drive down
whatever
the
they
verdict.
Can. Whatever
yeah.
they can to combat paying out anything.
Well, anyway,
yeah.
Daryl, please give us a call next week or the week after when the trial's over and let us know one way or the other what happened so our listeners can hear the end of your story.
I certainly will, and I thank you guys for being there, for providing this platform.
The best
Great.
Of luck with your
best of luck.
Yeah,
right.
with your case.
All
right,
thank
thanks,
you.
John. Yolanda, welcome to Court Radio, dear.
Hi.
Hi. You have a comment or a question?
What if you have a conviction, but it was overturned in appeal? Can you get that expunged?
Sure. So you had a conviction, and
uh-huh.
On appeal, the conviction was overturned.
Yes, it was dismissed.
Okay, so ultimately, you have a not guilty. I mean, it took an appellate court to render a not guilty, but you have a not guilty.
Okay.
And so the answer is, can that be expunged? And the answer is absolutely. You can file a petition for expungement and give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727. Those are routinely filed by my office and granted when the circumstances are correct. We don't bother filing them if they're not. So you'll know right away once we discuss your particular circumstances.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot,
right.
Yolanda. Have
Thank
a great
you so
Sunday.
Much.
Uh-huh. 215-263-1003.
Yes. Who's up now?
Nobody, because we're
oh.
going to take a quick break.
Okay.
2 minutes for our sponsors. Folks, listen up, because these are the people who help bring Court Radio to you today. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
If your child was injured at birth, if you were the victim of a medical mistake, or if you were hurt in a workplace or automobile accident, choosing the right legal representation is critical to getting the compensation you deserve. I'm Dean Weitzman from My Philly Lawyer. We've collected over $100 million for our clients, and we won't stop until your future is secure. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman, on Old School 100.3.
Is that Jerry? That voice?
Yeah, who is that voice?
Larry? Larry? Not Larry.
Larry?
No. Larry's got the brains, not the voice. That's why he's over there. 215-263-1003. 263-1003. That gets you in. David?
Yes.
What did I want to say?
Something about insurance.
Oh, yeah. That's right. So I have a client, and I represent the estate of. He passed away in the accident.
Okay.
He was a bicyclist struck by a car. Folks, we also, in that instance, treat a bicyclist as a pedestrian. It's still an automobile accident. And we still ask the question to the bicyclist's family, do you have car insurance at home? And we got the same answer again.
Yes,
no, but, I don't. Yes, I have car insurance,
but no uninsured
motorist. Okay, we were just looking for a policy to be legal. I mean, how many times have you heard that?
Yeah.
I said, well, all right, let me do this. I subpoenaed or requested the records from the insurance company of my own client.
Which you should.
By the way, the automobile that struck the bicycle was a motorcycle, and the motorcycle only had $15,000 of an insurance policy.
Gotcha.
And in fact, the motorcyclist and my client on the bicycle both perished in the accident.
Wow.
It was horrific. And the motorcyclist was at fault, and the motorcyclist only had a $15,000 policy, which his insurance company quickly offered to the family of the deceased.
Right.
Okay. Well, the deceased was an income earner. He supported two children and a wife, and he had a family. And what's $15,000? Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Okay. Well, there's never going to be enough money in this instance. True. Unless you're hit by a commercial vehicle. But nonetheless, just to show you what my Philly lawyer does, we called the family, we spoke to the family, we asked them about the insurance, they brought the policy, and the policy showed no uninsured, underinsured motorist. We wrote to the insurance company for our client, okay, to their own home policy, and demanded that they provide us with the waiver forms. When you give up the right for uninsured and underinsured motorists, you must sign waivers that say, I give it up, I don't want it, I want no uninsured, underinsured motorist. And it has to be signed and dated, and those waiver forms have to be written in a certain proper way, and they have to be signed by the first named insured. What does that mean? Well, if the policy is written husband and wife, okay, to Mr. and Mrs. Rappaport, David Rappaport and Cynthia Rappaport, okay? And so that's the way it's written, David first, then Cynthia. David is the only person who can sign the waiver forms legally. And in this instance, okay, and the family I represent, it was the wife who was the second named insured. She signed the waiver forms. It invalidated the waiver forms. I made the insurance company give this family coverage that they had not bought, but they were entitled to under the law. And so it's important that you take every step necessary when you're representing folks who depend upon you and they don't understand the system.
Now, here's the interesting question I have.
Yes.
And I'm sure the listeners have. Okay, so the waiver form was improper. The law dictates a way to do it. They did it wrong, the insurance company. So they were forced to give that coverage.
Yes.
Underinsured motorist coverage.
Yes.
How much? Because you could get zero to infinite.
Well,
so what were they obliged to give?
They were obliged to give the same amount of uninsured motorist coverage as they had liability coverage.
So the
first coverage you buy on your policy is liability. That's to pay somebody else if you're negligent and you cause injuries. This family had a 50/100,000 liability policy with one car.
Okay.
So they were obliged to provide $50,000 in underinsured motorist. Hey, listen, the man lost his life. It's not enough, but it's $50,000 more than this family had. And if they had just taken for granted that they didn't have the UM coverage, that $50,000 would have stayed in the insurance company's coffers, and it would have done that family no good. So I'm proud to say that, you know, well, that's what we do. If you need us and we're not here on Court Radio, you can always get us at 215-227-2727. 227-2727. That's where we are 5 days a week, 24 hours a day, actually, because we have call centers all over the country handling the calls when we're not there, and we get right back to you. Let's talk to Dennis from Nicetown. Yo, Dennis, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
We're doing good. I'm a little angry about my parking ticket, but, you know, otherwise, I'm all right. What got you up Sunday morning to call us?
I was in a fender bender, which I would say that I was neglected because I was in reverse, but I hit the lady's front quarter panel, and 2 years went by. Then they tell me, I get a letter from the insurance company, my insurance company, saying, hey, this person has 2 weeks to file their claim. And with behold, 12 days into the 2 weeks, I get the notice that I'm being sued. I'm being sued for $50,000 for a fender bender.
Okay, here it is.
All right. Yes.
You know, we've tackled this before.
We're going to give you the rundown on this one.
More likely than not, okay, it says
less than
$50,000 or less.
Uh-huh.
And the reason you have to put that in your lawsuit is because you have to let the court know if it's an arbitration, which are smaller cases, or a major case, which are larger cases. And so if you've done some catastrophic damage, significant damage to somebody, they have to say, I'm suing Dennis for $50,000 or more. They don't say how much more, but they let the court know, don't start this as a little baby arbitration. Start this in front of a judge as a major case. On the other hand, if it isn't a significant case, if she has fender bender-like injuries and her case is only worth $8,000, they say, I'm suing Dennis for $50,000 or less.
So 50,000 is the line, and you need to designate whether it's above or below. The number itself is meaningless as far as what they're asking for. They're not asking for 50,000 exactly. It's either above or below it. It's just a barometer. Okay. That's all that is. So
don't worry about that. There you go, Dennis. You're going to be fine.
You have insurance?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, so insurance is going to handle it. You're covered. You got no worries.
Thank you.
All right, Dennis. Take care, buddy.
You guys are great.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Sunday. 215-263-1003. Folks, give E. Stephen Collins a call. He's waiting for you right after this break.